Oh, that's right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I'm really excited here this morning. I am sitting across from a woman, brigadier, general, and a black woman on top of that. So, folks, you are in for a terrific story this morning. I am very fortunate to have Brigadier General Velma Richardson here with us this morning. She spoke last night to MOA. She was here representing National MOA here and came to our meeting, gave a great speech, met a lot of good people last night. We had a great night last night at the Inn on the Square, and then she got to lay her head down at the Inn on the Square, and she is charged and ready. How you doing this morning, Velma?
Doing great this morning. Had a good night's rest, and so I'm ready to go, and of course I've got to make the trek back to Augusta, Georgia, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you were talking about what a nice drive it was up here.
It was. I've never been through this area of the state. And actually, as I watched the news this morning, there were a couple of terms being used that were new to me. One had to do with an area being called the upstate. And I'm like, what is upstate? But I'm sure that's a particular area, and right. You all probably are accustomed to that.
As opposed to the coast in Charleston,
and
the Midlands, okay. Which is Columbia. Yes.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So that's what's been going on for the last, I guess 8 to 10 hours. Yeah.
So
just catching up.
Well, it really is a great place. And I don't know if you'll have any time before you leave, but you really ought to go by our Veterans Center right here in Greenwood. They took our old library and turned it into a one-stop Veterans Center. And we have quite a center. We have Jim Dominic. You met him last night. He was instrumental in doing our front plaza, which has all kinds of pavers to special people in the military, anybody that wants to do one. We have a huge eagle out front, and it's just an awesome place that is for our veterans here.
Well, I tell you what, if you give me an address or directions, I'll make it my business to stop by very quickly and at least say hello.
Absolutely.
To the employees, I guess, and the residents or folks who are being served there.
Well, it's a pretty neat place. We have a museum there. We have our Hall of Heroes there. And it just would be a nice stop as you head out of town. So
okay.
I'll be sure to tell you about it. So we are right here. We're going to be talking about how someone back in the 70s, being a woman, got into being in the Army and then made a career out of it. And Velma, we were talking before we came on the air. I asked you, what was, what maybe one of your interesting assignments? And you were telling me about your first one.
My very first assignment. Fort Bliss, Texas. So as I was explaining to you, I was one of five women who who were first in a combat arms branch, and that was the Air Defense Artillery. And we went to our basic courses there because the Army at that time was getting ready or in the middle of the transition from the Women's Army Corps, which I joined, to putting everybody into one regular Army. And
that had to be an exciting time.
It was. I know it was an exciting time and a crazy time of transition also for the Army, because guess what? No, I bet you we had been at Fort Bliss, Texas for about 6 months, the five of us. They called us all in on one day and said, look, you have to change your branch. And we were like, what? No explanation, no anything. So we all came up with other branches that we thought we would be interested in. And I said, hey, I'd like to, go into the Signal Corps. And that's how I ended up in the Signal Corps. And it's probably been one of the best decisions that I've made over my career and my life.
So what is the Signal Corps for if you're a non-military person?
So the Signal Corps is really the communications element of the military, and its main base is at Fort Gordon, Georgia, in and around Augusta, Georgia there. And we provide the both tactical and strategic communications for our military, our Army rather, as they are being deployed around the world.
Wow. So that's a pretty big job there.
Yeah, and they haven't gone away from radio, but when I joined, it was primarily radio and telephone. Today, it's, oh my goodness, you know, internet and anything else you can possibly think of that's out there that will help commanders to actually do their business, and that is lead and command soldiers and fight our wars.
Now, that actually could be a dangerous position because communications means you could go, could you go into battle?
Well, you're certainly fairly close, the Army is structured in a way that they have units that are very close to the battlefield or on the battlefield, and their communications elements integrated within those units, like a division or a combat brigade and those sorts of things. So absolutely, you can. But then they also have what at that time we called the core level, which typically was not that close to the to where the fighting was. But in today's fight, the way the battlefield is structured, almost everybody is subject to having to be in direct combat. So.
Absolutely.
It's been an interesting transition for the entire Army, actually.
Well, and when you think about it, let's see, that was in the early 1970s. That was the 24-hour woman. That was the capable woman. That was the woman that could do it all, right? Fry up the bacon in a pan and go out and work 8 hours. I look back at those times and say, why? Why did we do this to ourselves?
Yeah. Well, and actually, we did a pretty good job of it too.
We did.
So it's not like it was in the realm of the impossible.
Right.
It was spreading our wings and seeing what else we could do and how we would make our way in the world. So.
It was
a good time.
It was. That was an exciting time. And now, as you look back, you were telling me about your very first assignment and what happened when you walked through the door to report for duty.
Oh, my goodness. So, as I told you and was talking just a few minutes earlier, we were asked to change our branches. And so now I'm a communications officer, but with no communications training. I've been trained as an air defense artillery person. So here I am. I walk into my new assignment, and my battalion commander says, women can't serve here. This is a combat unit. And I'm like, oh, I am in trouble. So I go back to the personnel folks, and they tell me, if he wants a communications officer, you're it. So I had to go back in.
Did you have to report for duty and say, they said I have to come back?
Please give me a desk and some place to sit.
Give me a chance, boss. Give me a chance.
And so that one was not the most pleasant of relationships. Now, the job was great. The other folks within the unit, not a problem at all. But he was still just a little bit, not real happy that I was there. And then we got his replacement, who was a wonderful person. He had just come from what we called at that time our personnel center up in the Northern Virginia area. And he had been kind of maybe on the forefront of some of the transition of women into the regular Army. And he was just a great encourager for me, a great mentor, you know, was able to say, I guess, all the right things that made me still want to be there and do my very, very best. So I was real happy with that.
You know, I think one of the things that is so interesting is you spent 31 years in the military, right?
That's right. Uh-huh.
And I think if I read your bio correctly, you signed up just for two years.
Well, you know, that was the initial requirement as you joined the Women's Army Corps, 2 years. And that's what I planned to do. I didn't really have other real plans, however, after that. But I really was, having one, a great time. I was in a new place. I'd been, you know, in small town South Carolina all of my life.
And
Bennettsville, South Carolina. Yeah. And so now here I am in El Paso, Texas. I mean, I've been to North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, but I hadn't been west of the Mississippi ever. So here I am out there, and finally, I could actually see the sky. I could see the sun. I could see the moon at night. It was just a different place, and I had made very good friends, and so, you know, there was no reason to leave at that point. And also, I had gotten this pay raise. That was phenomenal,
right,
at the time, because of it was a longevity pay raise. And it was just, I said, okay, so do you have another plan, Vaughn? Because I call myself Vaughn. And I didn't, and so I decided to stay, and it was a great decision. It was the right thing for me to do, and I call it my calling, because I didn't feel like I was being called into the education field or the ministry or into medicine, but this being with people, relating to people, leading, making sure that the needs of our military services were being taken care of and so forth, just became my calling.
You know, people that love the military love the camaraderie, and they love that togetherness, and I think they like the structure too, because there is such good structure. You know right where you're going and where you fit and where you're headed next. And I think that a lot of people like that longevity. My husband is a Vietnam veteran, went to West Point, was in the Army, and just he said when he was at West Point, he knew life could get no better.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with him, and certainly agree with you that the camaraderie and the relationships you build over a period of time just simply lasts for so long. I have one girlfriend who was not in the military, but I met her via the military. We've been friends for the last, we're going to be celebrating our 50th year of friendship.
That's
next
awesome.
year. Awesome. And we've been in touch. We visit with each other. Her kids call me Aunt Vaughn. I've attended their weddings, you know, the births of their kids. I mean, just so much. And then you get to see some of your, what I would call some of your best work, some of God's work, mm-hmm, that you've been called pretty much to do in action. I've befriended and mentored a number of young officers who have, I mean, they far exceeded anything I've done. I mean, there's one.
Brigadier General. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
But there's one that's a 4-star general and is retired now.
And how's that make you feel, Vaughn?
Oh, my goodness. It's like, oh, my goodness, can you believe this? But you could see that in him early on. You could see the possibilities and the potential in him.
People had to see the possibilities and potential in you.
Well, I'm so glad they did.
So glad you did.
Because it wasn't always that obvious to me.
Right.
But, you know, when other people do see those kinds of opportunities and potential and are advocating for you and helping you to realize what you can't, what's in the realm of possible, not just for your skills, but for a career, for that matter. That's a good thing, and the Army certainly provided that for me.
You know, the Army, although we don't have a draft now, certainly still provides all that for people that go in that direction, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's we were talking about junior ROTC, and so while they're not recruiting our young high school students, they're making sure, though, that they have the skills and the right attitude towards being good citizens. And I think that's just a great start. And for those who then join the military, whether they stay, you know, for their initial assignment or whether they stay, you know, for a complete career until retirement, they are sought after in industry because of their skills and their dedication and their work ethic and so forth. I mean, you name it, and they're considered. Yeah, they're considered some of the best employees around.
They are, and yet, there certainly has been a big push today, or in the last 3 or 4 years, shall we say, to hire a veteran.
Absolutely,
because they do have those skills.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's made a big difference.
Yeah, so you know, in our downtime, in terms of our job market, we've had a number of veterans. Young folks who have served in a nation's war. We've been at war now for, 15, almost 18 years now.
Yep.
So there are a lot of them, and they come back, and many of them were having some difficulty in finding work back at home, not understanding maybe you don't need to be home, you need to move to where opportunity exists.
But the military changes you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think sometimes that makes it hard to go home, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I knew that Bennettsville would not be home for me for a long period of time. When I left to go to college, I packed up everything. My aunt gave me 3 or 4 foot lockers, and I packed up everything I thought was mine at the house. Put it in those foot lockers because even then I knew I had no intention of returning for an extended period of time. Visit, yes, my grandmother was there. I still had relatives there, but Bennettsville was not in my vision where I needed to be, to grow and to explore all the opportunities that were out there.
And what I've noticed about, I'm not originally from South Carolina, but what I've noticed about South Carolinians is they like to go back home.
They do.
So to stay.
To stay.
Yeah. Like not to leave.
Was very, very different for me. Very different for me. And I still have high school classmates who are still in Bennettsville, South Carolina today.
Yeah. I think in the military, you have to be willing to spread your wings and fly, right?
Absolutely. I mean, now, if you're not ready for that, you're in the wrong place. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. While I didn't have a lot of overseas assignments, most of my assignments have been stateside. I've still been in a number of places, either for training or for regular assignment, and so it's just been a great opportunity.
You know, and now that you take that opportunity that you were given and like to talk to and help mentor people in their lives, now tell us just a little bit about how you're mentoring. How are you doing your mentoring?
Yeah, so I like to speak to young folks. I belong to a number of organizations that have that as one of its primary purposes is mentorship. And so let me talk about just for a minute the National Board of the ROCKS.
I've got that here. And ROCKS. I read that.
And so because it's all in caps, people tend to think that it's an acronym, but it's not. It's actually named after an African-American general who helped to start the organization about 45 years or so ago. And its purpose is to mentor active duty folks and also to encourage both just college education as well as service to the military. So I've been a member of that, I think, since the early 80s. And so it's just one of those things that that gives me this wonderful feeling of, you know, we are not lost in this nation. We have great young folks who are coming up doing just great things. They're smart as a whip, can get things done. I was listening to an interview. I'm trying to remember who it was that did the interview. Might have been Rachel Maddow. Mm-hmm. With three of the young folks from Parkland, Florida. Mm-hmm. The articulate, you know, high school students involved in the political machinations of gun control and that sort of stuff, whether, you know, it doesn't matter which side of the, sure, the issue you're on. But I'm listening, I'm going, I don't think I was nearly that thoughtful or articulate when I was in the 9th, 10th, 11th grade. I mean, we have some young folks who are going to make us really, really proud, whether they serve in the military or do other things throughout our nation.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, you were talking last night about MOA as an organization has a lot of retired people in it. And you were talking about the longevity of organizations and how we need to encourage some of these younger people to get involved. One of the things that I thought was real insightful, Vaughn, was the fact that you said, get them in, don't sit them down and have dinner, get them doing something.
Absolutely. They want to be engaged. They want to know they're making a difference. And when that happens, you fuel the fire within them. So I just know that that's the right thing to do, whether they are 15, 16, or whether they're 40 or 42.
Right.
The younger crowd really wants to be engaged and be out there helping folks. And especially for those who have served in the military, that's what they've been about. You know, for however many years they've served, and so it's just a continuation of their purpose.
Well, you certainly have had a fascinating life, and we're going to run out of time here. But I did notice that the Hornets up there in Charlotte honored you last summer. Was it last summer? Last fall?
No, it was last fall.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that had to be a fun honor.
That was phenomenal. And so for me, it just shows how maintaining relationships, having networks of people who,
which is what the military is very good at doing.
Very good at doing, yeah. Who know you, who respect you, and who want to stay in connection with you, and who, if asked about you, will at least say something positive.
Can you just say one thing?
At least one thing. And so, you know, Michael Jordan owns the Hornets.
Right.
His brother and I served at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, back in the 90s. And his brother is now his chief operating officer.
Uh-huh. I get the connection.
And
here
so
now.
That's the connection. And when they had an opportunity to recognize somebody, and it happened to be, I want to say it was in March that we did it, because it was Women's History Month.
Right.
He decided to pick a woman and pick somebody that he knew, and my name came to his forefront, and that's how I got that honor.
That was pretty. That he honored you as the fifth season recipient of the season-long Yellow Ribbon Program.
Yes. Yeah, it was. Trust me, it was. It's and I got this wonderful jersey.
Right.
From the Hornets that they had framed and everything. And anybody who comes to my house gets to see that.
And it's alarmed, so if anybody goes to touch it.
I might consider that.
That's pretty cool. Well, you know, one more experience that really, in your military experience, that you said, wow, this is my awe moment, another awe moment, and then we'll have to close it out.
Awe moment. You know, I kind of expected to be selected to command a battalion.
Okay.
But I really did expect to have to go to maybe a training unit at Fort Gordon or something. And one of my mentors called me one day and said, "Now, you really do want to come to Fort Bragg and command such and such battalion, don't you?" And I went, "Yes, sir." I guess I do. So I ended up commanding. I was either the first or maybe second woman, regardless of race or anything of that sort, to command a corps level unit at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. It was a tremendous experience.
Tough.
Oh yeah, yeah. I actually ended up having some stomach issues. I mean, with all what I had internalized, stress,
sure,
and that sort of stuff. I mean, nobody's fault but mine. But I mean, those
it you are was, short. It was, you are yeah. short. Yes, you're not towering and not
yeah,
overpowering.
It's a daunting experience to be responsible for the health and welfare of, 500 young folks and soldiers and officers and NCOs who are looking to you as, the person with good common sense to lead them, to tell them about how to be, not necessarily how to be anything in particular, but how to be. That was a pretty daunting experience, yeah. But one of my most important ones, and one that because I still have a number of young folks who have come through that experience with me that I'm in contact with, yeah. In fact, one of my company commanders is now a 3-star general.
Wow.
A young man I mentored, advocated for, hopefully told him about how to be,
right,
and modeled, I hope, how to be so that he would have the right stuff to be the best that he could be to live up to his fullest potential.
You know, I think that's something we all hunger for, how to know how to be.
Yes.
How to be the best that we can be. And I think one of the things that helps is when you found, we'll call it a calling, when you found your direction, when you found your passion,
mm-hmm,
it's a little easier to figure out how to be, isn't it?
I think you're struggling at it all the time because there are lots of competing things,
right,
to pull you away from the right path, or not necessarily the right path, but a path of being a good citizen, being a good person, all of those things that people look for in their leaders. So, you have to work at it.
You have to work at it,
and you have to be consistent and say, no, I'm not going to fall off the track just because the wind is blowing in that direction. I'm going to stay the straight and narrow as much as I possibly can. Absolutely.
Did you ever go off the straight and narrow?
I probably did, but I'm going to plead the fifth right now.
She told me last night if I asked her a question, she was going to plead the fifth. I was hoping just to slide one in there, folks.
Yeah, I did tell her I was going to plead. If she asked me anything too hard, I would plead the fifth. You'd rather not have to go back to things you didn't do well.
Right.
I think.
But
so
don't you learn from those things too?
You learn from, oh, absolutely. If you don't, you're in real trouble. You just continue to spiral down and down. So that's the reason I say I plead the fifth. But I'm sure I have not been, how many of us are? I have not been a perfect person.
Sure.
And I certainly probably was not a perfect leader, but I did my best.
And
to
you
be,
loved it.
And I loved it.
And that's what
absolutely.
I think a passion helps keep you at least going in that right direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you had one sentence that you had to sum up how to be the best you can be with all your experience here, just one, well, two sentences, what would you tell everybody?
Put your faith in God. And if you do that, you'll know what the right thing is, and just don't stray. Do your very best not to stray.
Velma, this has been so much fun. Thank you for coming on the show
today. Well,
thank
you for having me. I appreciate it.
These are the type of things that just they help satisfy our soul to see somebody that has succeeded in life and is capable of sitting down and having a real conversation about those experiences.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it. I've certainly enjoyed Greenwood and getting a chance to understand, because I didn't know what to expect. So it's been a great experience, and I've enjoyed it, and I hope to get back at some point in time, maybe for the Memorial Day event that you all have.
That would be awesome. You know, one of the things that I would think that would be something, I don't know if you've done it or not, but have you told your story to the Veterans History Project through the Library of Congress?
You know, I haven't, and I probably will do that, because I think I'd like to also, if they will allow me, to tell my aunt's story as well.
It can be part of
my
overall
story. Yeah.
You can add other stuff to it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because she was a major influence in my life after losing my mother at a young age. So, very much so.
Well, we're getting ready to kick off a big project here with the Veterans History Project. I happen to have met Colonel Karen Lloyd, who is the executive director of the Veterans History Project. She and her husband were both in the military. She lost her husband. She has now become the director of this program. It's just a fantastic person. We've had her here in Greenwood. She was the speaker for the Hall of Heroes and very, very involved. In fact, I have one of those challenge coins, you know, those things that challenge you.
Yes. I hope mine is in my purse, so don't challenge me just yet.
But she has challenged me to see what we can do with getting more stories from South Carolina, and since we can claim you as a South Carolinian, I'd love for you to tell your story.
I will certainly look into that as I head back to the Virginia area and get a chance to understand that. I think there are just so many, not just South Carolinians, but folks across our country whose stories are not very well known.
That's true.
Through their service to the military and to their communities, for
correct.
That matter. So I think that's that would be very, very interesting to do.
Well,
and
particularly because of where, you know, whether you have, you know, a lot of people think on Veterans Day, oh, it's got to be blood and gore and all that kind of stuff. No, your story particularly is being one of the first women in that transformation of the military would be such a fascinating story to hear. And it would be preserved forever in the Library of Congress.
Well, I'll look into it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We are right here on WCRS. It has been my great pleasure to talk to Brigadier General Velma Richardson, USA retired Army. And thanks, everybody, for listening. That's going to do it for me. I'm going to show Velma out the door. Have a good one, everybody. Bye-bye.